been appointed by the governor as a private sector member of this august group. So congratulations, Senator, and welcome. We also have a visiting dignitary with us this afternoon, so I'd like to introduce Representative Kent Lambert. Welcome to our group. Thank you, Representative. Okay, Kathy, I think roll call is in order.
All right. Dr. Smith.
Here.
Evan Dreyer.
Here.
Bob Feingold.
Here.
Kent Glassman.
Here.
Bill Hobbs.
Here.
Roxy Huber.
Excused.
Greg Jennings.
Excused.
Mike Lukaitis.
Here.
Gerald Maroney.
Excused.
Don Maris.
Here.
Sandra May.
Present.
Okay.
Rico Munn.
People are saying he is.
Excused.
And Senator Kaplan.
Excused. Okay.
Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Do we have an update on Jerry Maroney? Haven't seen him in a while. How's he?
Greg?
I placed a call to his cell phone, but I haven't got anything back from him. I don't know if Kathy just...
Okay, he'd been in heart rehab, and I...
He's been back to work.
Okay. At this point, it looks like we have a quorum, so we can continue to move forward and vote on certain things, but this is the point where we ask that any member of the audience would like to say hi, and who you are, we'll welcome you to do that. I don't know whether we had a sign-up sheet or not. I'm not going to worry about that. If you'd like to introduce yourselves to us, and we'd love to know who you are, let's just go through, and if you want to pass, you can pass. You don't have to introduce yourself. Dan, let's start with you.
Dan Morrison, Colorado.gov.
Welcome to everyone. I'm a little nervous with so many librarians in the room. Let's watch ourselves.
Take the books back.
Okay. We have some minutes that we need to have approved. We'll start with October 4th. Is there any changes or additions to the October 4th, 2007 minutes?
Mr. Chair, according to our November meeting minutes, we approved the October minutes. Oh, later on we unapproved them?
We took it all back.
Greg?
Yeah, okay.
Director Maris, what happened on that is Representative Kaplan, now Senator Kaplan, said, I thought people had it more in advance than I did, and so I'd like to withdraw my motion to approve and so still have them out there hanging. And that was when we were at the retreat at LeVere's.
I move approval of the October 4th minutes.
Second.
Moved and seconded that we approve the October 4th minutes. All in favor say aye. Opposed, same sign, and those minutes are approved. Okay, November 1, 2007. Any corrections or additions to those minutes?
No, and I'd move approval.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded to approve the November 1, 2007 minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. And we have approved both of those minutes. Okay, we're on to committee reports. And looks like we have one committee giving us a report this afternoon. Finance Committee. Greg, you want to talk to Finance Committee?
Hi. You have in your packet the balance sheet and the P&L for through November 30th. Apologize again, as it is January 3rd. We can't have December's out. I can tell you that there are no unusual activities in December. But I would like to point out a a couple things. If you look at the balance sheet that is listed as of November 30th, and you look down on the November 30th and you can compare it to October 31, and you see the net income of 86.6. As you recall, we're on a fiscal year that mirrors the state fiscal year at this point. Our original budget from June 30 or July 1 to June 30, I had submitted for a net income of about $160,000, and we were talking about, you know, that's kind of our fudge number if we're really looking at a zero-based budgeting concept. And so we're right on budget for the year. Those are dollars that I believe we can have some discretionary discussion about. And I would like to have some discussion maybe later today about some things where we might be utilizing some of those funds. But it's a rather boring balance sheet and P&L in that it's very predictable at this point. I will tell you, we are still in the middle of financial audit by our auditors, Clifton Gunderson. We seem to be having some back and forth with the state auditor's office concerning those flexible federal funds that were expended in 05 prior to us even having a bank account, whether they should be subject to audit. Dan Winger of SysTest, myself, along with Paul Perini. What's his last name? Paul's last name?
Wyman.
I know a Paul Perini. I apologize for that. On whether those should be included in the audit or not, I am taking the viewpoint that since we didn't have control over them, they came from OSBP direct to the Treasurer's office. If they want to audit the Treasurer's office or OSBP on those funds, that would be more appropriate than saying that they are part of SIPADOD. But we will have that complete in the near future, of which we will give the board a copy of that financial audit. I will submit in the annual report to the legislature the internal non-audited financial status of the portal, and that will go next week after I can get the chairman's signature on the annual report, and it will be emailed to each of the board members at that time for their review, but it will be submitted at the start of session a week from yesterday to the business committees of both the House and the Senate, and I would entertain questions on finances.
Senator May.
Refresh my memory a little bit in regards to those federal funds. Before we actually had a bank account with SIPA, that all went through the Treasurer's office, right? And they received all the money and wrote all the checks?
Well, yes. I wouldn't say they received all the money. If you recall, the original earmark was for the $7 million of federal funds. And you and I and some of the others asked that they all be put in an account in our name, and that never occurred. Henry, in his very conservative, Henry Sauvigny, in his manner, and the governors, would only put enough in that account to pay warrants.
I remember that.
And so even on the, as OSBP put it into the Treasury, then a warrant would be drafted against the Treasury account. It would be signed by the Treasurer and would go to pay as Henry said it should be paid. But it was really an OSBP and Treasurer's control of funds.
Senator May.
So how much actually came to SIPA out of that?
SIPA itself, zero.
How much was spent in our name?
The only things... Well, I guess I don't understand.
Well,
what
I guess
was
what went to the Treasury and what came back to the effort of the operation certainly wasn't $7 million. Was it
$1.5 million?
What did it end up being?
It was about $2.5 million.
$2.5 million, okay. And we have no idea what happened to the remainder of that.
We don't. I can tell you that at one time, the last $750,000 that was earmarked, and that was going to be for the... single log-on part of the original That was earmarked as $750,000. I believe that was returned and went back to DoIt as part of the email consolidation effort. Couldn't swear to it. That's what the discussion was. Whether it actually went there or not, I don't know. And the rest of it, I don't know what OSBP and the governor did with it.
So is the problem with the audit over the whole $7 million or just the two and a half that was used?
It's not a problem. It's whether it's appropriate for us to pay for an audit of things that we had no control over, because it does come with a cost, and I'm not excited to pay for an audit of funds that never went through our control.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any further questions about either the profit and loss or balance sheet for Mr. Rippey? Seeing none, let's move on to the executive director's update. Mr. Rippey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll leave this. I'll have this be very short because we have a lot of things to discuss today. Senator Cabman has been appointed by the President of the Senate, Senator Groff, to serve in that capacity, which is very good. I have had conversation with Boards and Commissions person for Speaker Romanoff, who at this point has said that he's willing to abdicate that appointment to the Majority Leader. He can't abdicate the appointment, but he will take Representative May's recommendation and appoint it. I tried to make it very clear that this wasn't one that where there were three and two R's and D's, and that there was only going to be one appointment, just so that they knew. But since Representative Cabman was a Republican, he indicated that they were still going to take Representative May's recommendation on it. Senator Cabman has a call into the Speaker also at this point. We don't know what the Speaker's going to do as far as filling the Representative slot at this point. Representative/Senator Cabman headed off to Phoenix today. I spoke to him last night. We hope to have a resolution on that next week so that the February meeting, hopefully we could have a pretty full board appointed. I have talked to Mr. Lokaitis about one opening that we still have on private sector. Greg Jennick is giving his resignation to this board, even though he has term left. And there are some possibilities that Mike and I have spoke about to have a private sector member. And Mike, we need to follow up on that. And so then we would have a complete board, which would be great.
Senator May.
We've managed at this point, I think, to keep the SIPA board very nonpartisan. And I certainly would like to keep it that way. To me, the issue is whether someone is willing to participate, learn the issues, and contribute to being a member of the board that furthers the effort for the state. I've had a lot of problems, as you know, Greg, over the years getting legislators interested in IT. And for the most part, nobody gets paid for this. And you don't get travel. You don't get anything from that perspective. And many of the legislators are not willing to put forth the time and effort to learn it or to contribute their own time and effort into working the SIPA board. So it takes, as you know, Greg, a pretty dedicated individual out of the legislature to do it. So I would also suggest to the board that we talk to people and recruit them, shall we say, to be interested, to come, like Representative Lambert's here today. That would be good. And then over a time frame, you know, we'd have people who know what we're doing and who would have some interest in maybe joining us or whatever, even being used as a subcommittee person on some project or whatever. But you got to be selling the board, I think, to the legislature all the time.
And Yes, and if we can have some missionaries within the legislature, that always is helpful also. I share your opinion on the political agnosticism of SIPA, and I think we have demonstrated that in the past, and I'm certain that this board will continue to do. We will continue the conversations with Speaker Romanoff, who I'm sure has a lot on his plate the week before session begins.
Any other comments in that area? I might add, as I look around the board currently with Roxy missing, there's certainly one factor that stands out. Okay.
Trustees not being represented on the board.
That must be it. Okay, I see we have a report from Jim Duncan. Are you going to orchestrate that, Greg?
I will give a lead into this and introduce Mr. Duncan. As you know, the Colorado State Libraries has worked with us in concert on live help, on the staffing part of it. They also operate Ask Colorado, which is very similar to what our live help is. They do Ask Colorado. It's a separate link that is on our website. And they have a board for Ask Colorado that has looked at the service that they provide to Colorado.gov and what we have as far as live help on our homepage, on the first page there. And we've had some conversation with Jim and his team that's here today about what that is costing them and their reluctance to, without remuneration, significant remuneration, as we did have the discussion, about being able to continue that service. And Jim and his team, we've engaged in some very healthy dialogue on it. After the last conversation that we had, I invited Jim and Gene and Chris to have the opportunity to present to this board today about Ask Colorado and live help. And so I'd like to introduce to you Jim Duncan and or Gene. Boy, that's, you know, I wish I could get someone to speak for me. Welcome,
right
Gene.
Here.
Right there's fine. If you, do we need to get
close to a microphone so we can broadcast this to the thousands of listeners?
Yes, and just for the record, I am Gene Hayner from the Colorado State Library, speaking for my colleagues Jim Duncan and Chris Johnson. Jim is the director of the Networking and Resource Sharing Unit at the State Library. I am the director of the State Library. Chris is the operational manager for the Ask Colorado service. And thank you, Mr. Rippey, for the lead-in. You did hit many of the high points I'm going to cover. I usually talk off the cuff. I actually prepared remarks. Should take about 5 minutes. I hope you'll bear with me. I just want to make sure we get all the points in. But Chair, members of the SIPA board, thank you. As Mr. Rippey said, we are here today to talk about a meeting that occurred on December 12th with himself, with Mr. Rippey, Dan Morrison, Aaron Boyd, and others from Colorado Interactive about the Colorado.gov Live Help service. Currently, the state's portal Live Help link uses a software platform that's provided by AskColorado.org. Ask Colorado started in 2003 to provide residents with 24/7 reference service through the internet. It's operated cooperatively by more than 300 librarians in more than 75 libraries across the state. The underlying software platform that we use is provided by a national vendor called Tutor.com. That platform is paid for by the member libraries and the cooperative. Anyone with internet access can use this service free of charge anywhere, anytime. And no state money has been used for support of this service. The trial partnership that Mr. Rippey referred to began.
So, Gene, where does that money come from, though?
It's from the partners themselves. The 75 libraries contribute on a fee scale.
County taxes or something like that?
From the libraries themselves. So some of it would be from county taxes, but it's what the library budgets for virtual reference service.
Senator, some of them may be library districts that have their own taxing authority or mill levy in there. So there's a lot of different ways a library can get money. Not as many as they would like.
And it's also supplemented by a federal grant that the state library receives as well. The partnership itself began about 2 years ago when COGOV was in the early stages of formation. It was formed to create an open, responsive system to answer questions that were posed by people visiting the portal. Conversations between the staff who were there at Colorado Interactive at the time, and I understand are no longer there, and Jim's predecessor at the State Library, felt that giving residents a chance to get help through a live interactive session was a win-win solution. It gave librarians a chance to show their expertise in answering a wide range of questions, and it also provided the state with a quality, proven live help service, unlike what was being offered in any other state. Initially, the agreement was that we would provide, that Colorado Interactive would provide up to two staff to help answer the questions during the workday, that being 8 to 5, and any rollover questions that weren't answered or that were answered outside of that time would be picked up by librarians themselves, this cooperative, or by the tutor.com staff. However, the volume has outpaced everyone's expectations and demand. You have in front of you a chart handout which shows you a coverage of the last 23 months of service. In blue is the 2006 and in red is the 2007 numbers through November. And as you can see, the Colorado.gov queue has more than doubled in usage from an average of 561 a month in 06 to about 1200 in 07. And I can tell you the number of users attest to its popularity. Our nearest neighbors, for example, that use the NIC portal, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Montana, see anywhere from 45 to 275 sessions per month. And this is according to research that was presented by Dan Morrison to us. He also pointed out that this is the only service that is not hosted directly by a portal authority, such as Colorado Interactive. Just so you understand, a session is any interaction between someone asking a question and the person answering it. It can last anywhere from a minute to up to a half an hour or more. In 07, Ask Colorado librarians handled 86% of the live help sessions, and this is on top of the other sessions that they handle through a K-12 queue, higher education, and a general queue through the live portal, through the Ask Colorado link. In total, more than 5,000 questions per month are answered by Ask Colorado. We did a user survey recently and found out that 75% of those using LiveHelp itself rate it helpful or very helpful, and 85% say that they would use it again. So I can tell you it has been successful. As Paul Harvey would say, page two. In our discussion with Colorado Interactive on the 12th, we noted that at some point it should have been reviewed. However, due to key personnel changes in Colorado Interactive and at the State Library, that review was delayed. So we're doing that now. We started in February, and we really want to look at how it's working, which brings me to the points that Mr. Rippey led off with. Three key points that we want to resolve. First of all is funding. Ask Colorado doesn't receive funding or monetary compensation from Colorado, State of Colorado, or Colorado Interactive for the technical infrastructure and staffing behind LiveHelp. Second is dealing with the usage increase. Use of LiveHelp, while it's been successful, has increased to the beyond the expectations of either of us. So the current infrastructure and work arrangements are not meeting current demands, and it is not scalable to what we project as future growth. And third is maintaining the quality. While librarians appreciate their role in this partnership, they increasingly are not able to deal effectively with the non-governmental questions that come in from their core users in the other queues, K-12, general, and academic. And it was clear from our meeting that Mr. Rippey and Colorado Interactive understand the situation and sympathize with these points. They're responsive in helping us devise a plan of action, which was twofold. First was raising awareness with you, members of the SIPA board, about LiveHelp. And second, to seek some interim operational changes or service changes until we could review the technical and human resources that are behind LiveHelp and that make it work. There's been progress toward these service changes. For example, the CI staff has reduced the number of LiveHelp links. They are helping to evaluate the technical steps and transition to an 8-to-5 workday system that would be deployed in lieu of 24/7 support. And they expect to have that in place by January 8th, according to our discussions. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Partnership for Live Health Service has been and can continue to be a valuable benefit for Coloradans in the state. It's a model for other states to follow. Due to the factors outlined here today, we hope you understand that the current operational status of the service is at a crossroads. We're looking for your guidance on whether Colorado Interactive should move ahead on its own service model, or whether we can continue the current levels of service, develop a formal operating agreement, and continue as we have been. Such operating agreements are in place with the other 75 partners in this cooperative. They specify such things as monetary support, staff scheduling, expectations, and member support. The development team behind Ask Colorado is able and willing to work with Colorado Interactive in developing a plan that addresses future growth and mutual expectations. If you or CI feels that other operational measures are in order for LiveHelp and they're better suited for the future of the Colorado State Portal, then the members of Ask Colorado are able and willing to step aside and let those plans be developed and be brought online. We're open to any questions you have and any advice or direction you can offer us. Thank you.
Questions? Gene, I guess I'm a lot of your problem, friend. I'm sorry about that. I've passed out over 1,000 cards and encouraging people to hit the live help.
That's not a problem. We just want to make sure that it goes forward in a good way.
I've already done two today. I'm sorry.
Actually, we appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
The help situation, although it wasn't called Live Help, Pikes Peak Library District had that way back in the mid-'80s, I'm going to say, mid to late 80s, because I can remember working with them down there, and they did it all on their own server and hosted it right at the Pikes Peak Library.
Right. Exactly.
So when this came along, and I guess I had a misunderstanding, Dan, I thought your people were doing most of this, and then what spilled over was done by the librarians across the state. How that was done, I don't know. My intent originally with the Live Help was to use that as a marketing tool to draw people to the Colorado.com webpage so that we could get people using that, get them interested in coming to Colorado. Colorado.org, I guess, and get them used to coming to that. And that was what I used it for, basically, was a marketing tool.
And if I may say, it's been successful. I mean, 85% of people say they'd use it again. I don't think you can get 85% government support in many places. So, yes, it's been very good. It's just that we have these conflicting problems that I've outlined for you.
We could flood you even more by passing this through the K-12.
Well, actually, we do have a K-12 queue for it as well.
I know you do, but it could be used a whole lot more if you put the word out there.
60% of the traffic right now is K-12, of the 5,000 or so that are used each month. And what's reflected on your chart there is just the Colorado.gov queue itself.
Mr. Rippey?
No.
Go ahead with that question.
What happens if we take live help off of that?
I'll talk to you a little bit after we get some questions.
Further questions?
I just wanted to make sure that I understood what you said right. 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
Reduction of links.
Mm-hmm.
Did I hear that correct?
Right. And I would kind of have to defer to Aaron and Dan as to exactly how they're enacting that.
Are we reducing links to make it a little bit more challenging to get to Ask Colorado and Live Help?
Essentially, yes.
Okay.
But I could offer some clarifying information. And the dialogue that we've had over these months, we've had several meetings about how we can resolve this issue, because their Ask Colorado service has really been the baseline anchor for all the functionality. We have had two full-time equivalent staff in our office during working hours. Sessions. They haven't been the only ones. Look at the graph. Our interpretation of the red line for 2007, which is dramatically higher than 2006, is because we've launched so many more applications and propagated that Live Help link through the headers of all of those web pages, and we're attracting thousands of users to our apps. This is a phenomenon based on more exposure of the app, of the links to Live Help. Question for us, and I think what we're getting to is consider is what percentage of the traffic is related to the support of the portal's online services. Also, in your package, you have a document that we prepared based on our meetings ongoing with the state library system. We thought it was important to reach out to other NIC states. This document is entitled "Live Help with the NIC Portal." We wanted to do a reality check with the other portals that offer Live Help to get a feeling for what the Live Help volume really is and how they run their Live Help session. And what this document tells you is that all the Colorado offer the service 85. Some of them host the solution themselves, and some of them service like Tutor.com. And the volume on those other states reasonably low. That is to say, the highest one is Tennessee with 650. We don't have a very good ability today to know how many of the live chat sessions that go through the portal actually relate. Live chat function as it exists. Questions about any topic you could imagine. State librarians in conjunction with the question is, should the portal be supporting broader live chat? Work towards.
And let me ask a clarification question. Originally, everybody's vision was that your folks would man it 8 to 5. Two full-time staff that are doing that during business hours. During business hours, does it also roll over to the library when there is access?
Yes.
So what portion are they answering calls? How much is rolling over to them during that?
We don't know. It's the same service.
We do have data on that, Mr. Chair. Is this a time to bring that up?
I'd like to share that.
I'll ask Chris Johnson to or Jim to address that. If you can imagine this service
in the reality of your library,
if you walk up to your reference desk and you saw a line that said government questions, K-12 questions, academic questions, and you know what your question was and you stood in that line, that's somewhat equivalent to how this works. So if someone gets up to the Colorado or the government line and sees that there's 40 people in line and there's an overflow, that overflow goes into a separate queue that's picked up by people that aren't staffing that desk specifically. Does that help paint a picture of how that works? So we can come up with numbers on who is in line, who doesn't get answered, who doesn't get in line.
It's July.
Jim, is that 8 to 5, or are you taking 15% of the total? So, but from 8 to 5, do you know that percentage? Because I think that was the question.
Right, exactly.
Well, let me, if I may, Mr. Chairman, Let me tell you why we're here. Because Gene gave you a very good background of what's occurring, how we got here today, and really what transpired on this meeting of December 12th. As Colorado, and there's no judgment in any of these statements that I'm saying, we're here today because as they came to the December 12th meeting, their board, and they do have a board for Ask Colorado, says, whoa, wait a minute, we are subsidizing Colorado.gov and this live help to a large extent. And that number, and I think it's important, we're here because of the size of that number and the discussion that occurred. That number is about $1 per response that the librarians give. It came out about $86,000 on an annualized basis. And I says, whoa, I can't go to my board and say, are you willing to allocate $86,000 a year for live help to continue in the way that it's going? Likewise, as Colorado's board has looked at it and says, hey, we can no longer afford to subsidize to this extent Colorado.gov and the live help function. The interim step that we're at right now that will take effect on January 8th is live help will only be, and if I misspeak, Dan or Aaron, please jump in here and tell me. Live help will still be up there, but when you log on, and if you look at all these other states, no other state does it 24/7. Live help will continue to be there 8 to 5, answered by Colorado Interactive employees. Ask Colorado will still be a link that is up there, and if people want to go to Ask Colorado, that will be separate, but it will not be live help rolling over to Ask Colorado. Is that the way you understand it starting January 8th?
Yes. The way I understand it, yes.
And so live help will continue 8 to 5 until we further this discussion. We are at a crossroads of having it, and that's why we're before the board here today. But I think it's very important that we put numbers on it, because we've all just sat here and talked a little bit about, and live help's a wonderful thing. I don't think anybody that sits around this table is going to dispute that. And the question that is before our board, as it was before their board, can we afford to subsidize to that amount or to pay that amount for the service, and what is the cost benefit for this board? And we have to look at it in the holistic view of the citizens of the state of Colorado. And I don't think we're going to have resolution here today on what that is. One of you may put forward a motion to direct something, but that's why we're here today. And I hope that brought a little bit more clarity to it and some real numbers to it. And if I misspoke that number, Chris or Jim or Gene, but that's the number I recall, ballpark $86,000 annualized.
Mr. Holmes.
I think probably 86,000 is probably what I was looking for, some measure of support required. But I'm just, if you don't mind, I'm just still a little confused about where how that lines up. I mean, I must be confused, because I think Dan saying handle 15% of the calls is 2 FTE. So it seems like Ask Colorado must have substantially more FTE, and how that could be just amounting to $86,000.
Well, I can tell you, Bill, that 2 FTE, they are there, they handle it. They also have other duties within CI that they're doing when they're not doing that.
Well, it's the same way with the libraries. They have other duties, too.
Sure. But probably not on the 24/7 part of it. When somebody is scheduled, staffed to be the person that is taking live help calls, they probably, as you know, they may be at home in Lima taking care of this. And so, yeah, they probably, their business model is slightly different than CI's.
The Ask Colorado guest is like a virtual service. So anytime, which is 24/7, they're not doing other things. They are.
I, I just want to say that that was what Mr. Rippey said is pretty accurate. We do have a schedule of people who rotate, and it is about 300 people in the 75 cooperative libraries.
Senator Maine.
Mr. Chairman, has
I'll make a
relaxed.
Motion that we proceed with Greg's recommendation of doing the, what, 8 to 5? And
well, you, Senator, at this point, we don't have any options to do that today, to do anything different than that today. I would hope that the
well,
direction.
We can review this again in a period of time.
And I'd like you to think about it and think about you know, what sort of conversation should we continue to have with Gene. We've both enjoyed and both benefited from the relationship that we've had to date. What we're here and what Gene's here for is this, as he portrayed it, was a handshake deal that they had with Rich Olson when it first came up. And so, okay, let's all step back from a contract negotiation status and see where we're at. Is that accurate, Gene? I hope I'm portraying that accurately from your viewpoint also.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Senator May.
You don't want that motion made then?
You can make any motion you'd like, but what I would like on the motion is we know what we're going to do come January 8th. I mean, that's realism.
That's operational.
That's operational. That's what we've got to do. The clarification and direction is, you know, where do you want us to go? Do you want us to continue negotiation, trying to work with Ask Colorado and figuring out do we have some ground that we can work at? Is there a place where monetarily we can support Ask Colorado? Do you want us to continue trying to find that solution?
Senator May.
Is there any possibility of applying for a federal grant on this, since we're the only state who's doing 24/7?
I don't know.
Mr. Dreyer and then Mr. Blackman.
I hope that Senator May does not make that motion because I would vote against it philosophically.
I would draw the motion.
This is somewhat distressing to me, and I appreciate the position that you all are in, not having many options. But my approach to this is, we have a clear demand that is only growing, and we are now about to take two steps that actually make it difficult to meet that demand, and I understand why, and again, I appreciate that. We have a problem. I think that we should turn immediately to providing you with the direction to solve that problem, and whether it is exploring other funding sources or trying to work out some a new arrangement that's more formal but sustainable over the long term, we need to head in that direction. This is a great service. It makes government more accessible to people all the time. People don't not use the internet outside of business hours. So,
well, Evan, this is a flippant remark. So, does the governor's budget have that in it? Flippant remark. So
maybe not. We do a lot of things in the governor's office to try to drive people to Colorado.gov, to all of the services, not just the governor's
office.
From
what I heard you say, though, is we should be exploring whether it is governor's office or where we might be able to find
all
this.
Possible.
Yeah. That's correct.
Mr. Glass.
I just didn't want you to take offense on making a
remark. Sure, unless there's additional discussion.
Last one.
I heard you to say, I believe, that this existing solution is not scalable at the rate that we've seen. So if that is a true statement, I think we need to ask staff to come back and tell us what our viable alternatives are and the costs associated with those. If this is scalable, that should be one of those options brought to us. But I agree that we're creating our own demand. Let's meet the demand.
Yes, thank you, Chair. What I said was that not scalable is the current operational procedures with the cooperative Ask Colorado working and handling 85% to 90% of the current volume. I did not address the issue of whether or not the solution, if that's what you're referring to, that's in place for the 8 to 5 service is scalable or not. That's something that's handled by Colorado Interactive.
Dr. Feingold.
Just a clarification. In going from 24/7 to standard daytime business hours, what proportion of the sessions occur outside of normal business hours? Is it a large portion? I mean, I'm trying to follow up what Evan said about, you know, the quality of service. Do we know that information?
If I could refer to my brains behind the operation here, Mr. Duncan.
We did an analysis of one.
Okay, so one sample.
2007, and questions that came through after 5 and through the weekends. A bit of that long tail principle.
Yeah, there's... It would be a substantial curtailment in service, even though you could say it's less than 50% of the work. That's a lot. People would really feel that they've lost service. I know I would if I was
in that 41%. Well, and they may just go to Ask Colorado, and they could still get that service. But what I want this board to be very clear about is that the number of questions that come in that are portal related are a small amount. Now, wherever you find the money, please understand that if we took it all out of SIPA dollars, then those are dollars that are foregone for other portal activities. And however you identify the value of that, I think that's a data point that you need to take into consideration. And Evan, I know that you're, with your governor's hat on, you're coming from a slightly different place. And that's okay. That's okay to talk about it, but I want eyes open discussion about dollars and where they come from and what they achieve.
Mr. Dreyer.
A question and a statement, I guess. Where does Colorado Interactive achieve the savings in this short term?
Savings? I don't think they would achieve any savings.
Going from 24/7 to
8. Yeah. They don't achieve any savings because that's all they're doing right now. They're not doing anything outside that 8 to 5. There are no achievings of savings. There's a reduction in service.
Is there an alternative to such a drastic reduction in service that still allows us to goal again for the short term?
The only option that I see there is if Colorado Interactive was going to hire additional FTE to do that, and that still has the same cost, whether it's for the libraries or for, I think the cost is the cost for past 5 o'clock. And that's why, and their point is, they're coming here and saying, we do it, but we need some help, which would be, it would still be whether we send money their way or we take money out of portal operations by asking CI to do it. I think it's where it comes from is probably moot and probably less efficient if we say we're asking CI to have additional FTEs to service that.
Are there requests that are coming in right now that just aren't getting, that we aren't getting to because we can't handle the current demand?
On my help?
Yes. Just for example, last month, about 1 in 4 questions were not picked up at the Colorado.gov queue.
So somebody logged off before they got hooked up with a library?
Exactly.
And one of my questions, Gene, as we look at this and we talk about what's going to happen January 8th, and you talk about your K-12 queue, and we talk about if everybody finds out that the way to get around this is not to go to live help after 5 o'clock, but go to Ask Colorado, you still have that same expense and the same issue there if people find out, well, after 5, I can't go to LiveHelp, I go to Ask Colorado. You may still have that same crunch up against you, and I don't know how you've looked at that.
Thank you, Chair. If you imagine that reference desk that I described earlier with the different lines, if you go to an interim solution, you're essentially closing the door on that line and directing people to another building down the street. So I'm not sure that people would make that connection between, I have a question for the Secretary of State's office at the government, I'm going to go to Ask Colorado. I don't know that that would be an automatic response of people. So I don't know that it would. The service to the state would be diminished accordingly because they're not getting that 24/7 help. I don't know that it would continue to influence our services as much because of the separation.
Mr. Morrison?
Could I offer just a clarifying comment or two? The proposed solution that we have already implemented and that initially be in effect, but that we think is a viable approach for the long term, they'll immediately see a screen or help with a portal related online service. Click here. And staff by our staff. However, if you're looking for general questions about the state of product, so we simply give if you want help with a portal related service, come to us. If you want other help,
Dr. Feingold.
So, essentially, you're getting out of the business of general purpose help for citizens.
Yes. Effectively, yes.
Okay. So the burden, whether they go through Ask Colorado or Live Help, they're going to get to Ask Colorado.
They're going to have the option to go there if it's not a portal.
Yeah, but I mean, a portal thing, you're supposed to handle that. Other general questions are all going to be directed, if user behavior follows what we've laid out, they're all going to go to you. So you're going to get the queue, whether it's a queuing system of one line with a single server or it's multiple lines with multiple servers, you get them all. And you're being overwhelmed. Okay, so The portal related questions are going to get answered. The problem that you have, that you're looking to this board for assistance on, is being able to staff and have the infrastructure to be able to handle a growing queue of customers that want to use your service. Am I correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so what we have to figure out is if it's appropriate for the portal to be handling general purpose help questions, and what contribution can we make to solving the problem of providing these services to citizens. Is that okay? So I'm just trying to make sure I understand it.
I guess I'm kind of puzzled as to why we ask the library people to come up and ask us for help in solving this problem and didn't have Dan get up and defend why they're ready to change the practice they've been going on for a while.
Sure.
Why did we put the shoe on these folks' foot instead of
his? We didn't. They put it on ours. Following the 12th, and we were trying to negotiate, and then they said that their board had a meeting and their commitment and service would expire. It was originally today or yesterday, and then they backed it off to January 8th. And so we didn't throw it back on them and say, this is what we're going to do. Their board said, we're not going to do this anymore. The first conversation that I had...
What is the this, please?
Service as status quo. We're not going to continue this
24/7 or through the portal.
Live Help, Ask Colorado, servicing Live Help. And I think there were some conversations that occurred going back to last February that I was not aware of. I felt like we got pretty much to an 11th hour at this through no one's fault that I can identify, but clearly, 11th hour. And then from December 12th to last week, their board took the action that said it's going to change January 2nd, which then got backed off to January 8th. And that's why I invited them to come and speak about this today.
Maybe let me ask it differently. Instead of only asking the library folks to come up, our board has a contract with Dan's company. And they've been doing something, whether it's gratis or part of the contract, I don't know.
It's not part of the contract.
They've been doing something for some period of time that has been backfilling this issue. I guess, let me just ask it differently. Say, I want to know why our contractor is changing its tune, what it takes for them to stay at the table. And I want to have a discussion with the people who we have a contract with about the fact that, on their reaction to this. They may be absolutely right in the way they're reacting, but I guess this, as Evan said, is going to have a big impact on the people out there. I won't know what a portal is. I hope we're going to use different language than that, but they won't know what you mean by a portal question versus another question. They're just coming to get a question answered. And so I want to know, I guess I just want to know a little more about what our contractor's doing and why, and instead of putting these people completely on the seat as sort of the people driving this issue, because that's
sure,
important
let me,
to me.
If I may take the first stab on it, and then I'll turn it over to Dan. As we first put out an RFP and we said exactly what we expect out of our contractor, live help was never discussed. It was not part of it. It is not something that we contracted with NIC to provide and was ever contemplated as being a must-have service. As we launched the portal, Rich Olson, there are some live help components in other NIC states. Rich Olson, along with the library, said, wouldn't it be neat if we could do this together? It was kind of a pilot-type project. It was done on a handshake. There's no MOU or contract between CI, SIPA, and the libraries. It's always just been kind of, let's work together. But its success has led to, this isn't working for the libraries. So the question is, and I think the perspective that's appropriate to have is, if we're going to take dollars and support it, and it is a desirable function, then you as a board need to know what those dollars are. It has never cost in the past. It has been free. So now we're at a decision point, and it's nothing in the contract between us and NIC or Colorado Interactive that you could say, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you finding a solution? This has occurred. It's happened. It's been successful. There's a cost impact on it. And how would you like to deal with it? So I'll give Dan a chance if I misconstrued anything from CIs. And Don, did I answer your question?
No, but I'll hear what Dan has to say.
Thanks for your question. The NIC portals across the board feel it's very important to offer live help. Look at, around the country, the portals that are the most interactive with their citizens offer. So I would say, speaking from the NIC perspective, we're committed to offering live help in every portal environment that we can. We engage live help. We did it collaboratively with the state libraries. As a, I guess you would call it a joint venture, or as an experiment in collaboration to see worked well. Our part of that collaboration was to have two full-time equivalents dedicated to it. Library's commitment to it was to provide the platform, that is to say, tutor.com, have as a backup to our staff in the state libraries. What most portals do, and the chart that I handed you in your packet, those live help functions are dedicated to supporting interactive services that are built by the portal with their state agency partners. And they tend to get more robust over time because if you select the right software tool, we can have Department of Revenue staff that are tax experts be live chat operators with us to answer tax questions. We can have investigation staff answer questions about the sex offender database. IT staff answer questions about the tool is robust enough that it allows us to distribute that platform support across the state enterprise with departments that work. Almost every state that you see on that list, or every state that you see on that list, focuses their LiveFelt support to the apps we build.
Yes,
they're typically not supporting questions of what's the phone number for the tax assessor's office in Route County. Our answer to that would be, boy, I wish I could help you but find the phone book. So,
well, so what's basically happening here is the library system is providing a service after hours that is answering what I would call portal-related questions about applications that are being hosted on Colorado.gov.
No. It's not about applications.
After hours, they are, in fact, fielding some questions about portal.
Okay.
But the converse of that is that during working hours, we are, in fact, fielding questions that are non-portal.
Okay. And so that is overwhelming because of the volume, both servicing organizations.
Not overwhelming to Colorado.gov.
Because you're only doing it two people, you've budgeted for that, and it's 8 to 5.
Correct.
But it is impacting your operation.
It's impacting our operation because we're picking up the 85 to 90% that aren't being picked up during the workday, plus the time after hours.
Oh, I got it.
I think Dan has a point, and this is large scale and it requires some reengineering, but what we did in Denver was every one of the departments had its own, any department of significance, like the Department of Safety, Human Services, the auditor's function, had its own call-taking capability, often 7x24, and you'd go to the blue page listings, one of 1,200 for the city and county of Denver, and try to sort out who to call. What we did was we provided the tools so that, one, we had a centralized call-taking capability, but it would roll over to some of those other functions within the departments. We really need to look at the engineering of our whole customer service workflow within the state and come up with some kind of a multi-channel, meaning web and voice and so on, approach to make government services more accessible. I would argue that Colorado has the same issue that the city and county of Denver had, is you need sort of a, it gets back to our one stop and everything else, you need a decoder ring to find your way around. You have to call several different places. And what Mayor Hickenlooper was trying to accomplish is you call one place. Often, you know, you get a 70% first call resolution, and then anything else gets directed to the departments with a ticket number, so there's accountability around it, and you can track the requests as they're headed around the various city functions, in this case the various state functions. But it's a matter of our enterprise, our consolidation efforts, you know, kind of really bringing that together. And a lot of states are moving in that direction. There's a lot of talk about state, quote, 311 or multi-channel approach for general service approach for state. Wouldn't it be great for state functions if you could call one number and either get your question answered or be directed the right place at the right time? And it's achievable. We did it, you know, it was, the mayor said it was, we get it done by the state of the city or it's my job, and we got it done in like 18 months. So, but it requires major business process reengineering. It requires that we go out and look at the state of all the capabilities of all the call centers that are in the departments today. I would argue, John, you have a 7x24 call center, probably, that's handling inquiries over the web and call in, or at least a 12-hour call center. I don't know if you take any calls or if you have the capability to answer questions or direct inquiries across the state to other departments, but if we were on one system, you would be able to do that. We'd be able to balance our call-taking load.
As a board member, I'm not sure I know exactly what I'm being asked to do here. I think that I understand a couple of the issues, but I don't know what the alternatives are. What I'm hearing, too, is there's at least an interim fallback position here for January 8 moving forward. I guess I'd like to see a couple of a subcommittee of this board, or perhaps I'd rather just charge staff with going out and researching this over the next, you know, 30, 60 days and better framing this to decision points. I really think I watched what Mike did in Denver, and I see this consolidation effort happening and the various help desks, we've got huge resources enterprise-wide in the state. If the various departments will play ball here, we could architect this solution. It's a while out, but I'd rather know what some of our interim solutions are, and if we can help state libraries in this interim, I'm all for it. But I need this framed a little bit better by staff or a subcommittee.
Well, it kind of hitchhikes off now what Mike was asking about. Are you distributed down to the regional libraries for regional or local issues? Sounds like you're in a functional environment right now rather than a regional.
I'm not sure how you're defining regional libraries.
Like regional library districts geographically. Are there regional districts that you could network into
It's not distributed in that way. It's whoever happens to be on the desk at that time handles the question. Again, I'm not sure I'm following the exact nature of the question. Of the 75 libraries, they're all over the state, in addition to the tutor.com people who pick up an additional amount of overflow. So there's no centralization or regionalization to that structure.
I was just going to add, we probably don't have the 30 days that Mr. Glassman's recommending, because Evan's point is, if we have compromised service here, it's going to back up, you know, somewhere in the governor's office. Heard for that. I don't know, Evan. Probably need to go talk to, this is one of those that could be visible enough that we need to go talk to Jim Carpenter and
I wonder if I could make a comment on that. You know, at this point, I'm pretty disappointed that we're at this point in time. It's kind of a crisis intervention situation. But one of the things that we've touted with the portal is this 24/7 information aspect that we have provided the citizens of Colorado up to this point. We are aware. Some of the services provided on the portal are not, they don't provide funds, they actually cost us to provide those to the citizens of the state of Colorado. And it sounds like this is a big issue that needs some further consideration. One thing that I might suggest is that, you know, we're looking at a couple of days here for a dramatic change in the way the portal provides service, and we've not provided our citizens with any kind of transition. If this indeed is the direction that we're going, it seems to me that it should have been 60 days ago starting to get this word out. So what I might suggest is that charge Greg to sit down and negotiate with everybody involved, that maybe we take what I estimate as $14,000 to get us through 2 months worth of time, $7,000 a month maximum that he has to negotiate this problem with, and see if we can't study this and get a better answer than trying to today make an answer. Senator May.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to bring us back to the original thinking of the portal. As you guys know, I ran the bill three times before I finally got it through. The portal was set up to be a self-funding model. We haven't gone to the JBC, we haven't gone to the legislature, we haven't gone to the governor and asked them for money. The portal has been self-funding since day one. Okay, now, what we are is we're a business. And we're a board of directors for a business. Now, we knew when we set this up that there would be some departments of the state, some entities of the state, which would deliver a product that could not demand a fee for service. But we started out by picking those entities that gave us a fee for service, that gave us revenue into the SIPA. Now, if we get that out of proportion, whereby we're giving away more,
than we're taking in, we're in trouble. Everybody can understand that as an issue. Now, there's still a lot of entities of the state out there that are delivering product that we could be delivering free to the public. As a matter of fact, the bill said that 80% of what we deliver would be non-chargeable. Okay? Now, I think that the chargeable fee-for-service stuff is dragging behind right now. And had we gotten some of these in, you know, we might be in a position to help somebody else out. But we better be in a position to help some of these non-generating entities of the state at some point to get their programs together through CI or whatever to get online. And I think we have to be very careful about getting the cart before the horse, in essence. This to me is an important project, and it's great for the people of Colorado. But if we haven't worked with those entities of the state who need to deliver product, I mean, that was our original purpose, because there's some of them that just don't do that, and they never will. But they need to be part of the system whereby the public can get that information. So I think we have to be very careful as a board of directors what we commit to for free before the revenue streams of what we had planned really get going.
Well, and that's not what I'm suggesting that we do, Senator. I'm saying that we provide this service for free. What I'm saying is here we are today in a crisis situation.
I understand what you're saying to fix this problem.
Yeah, exactly. But I had no idea until today that much of what the rollover was happening was not with Colorado Interactive, it was going to the libraries. We should have known that before today. We should have known that there was a problem heading our way before today.
But see what Mike's saying about the city of Denver, that wasn't a self-funding model. That was done with other dollars or whatever. And I'd like to see us stay a self-funding model, personally.
I agree 100%. I'm not saying.
Question is, do we have money right now to
get us through, study this program, and figure out what
will the problem go away? Or are we picking this up forever? I don't know.
I hope not.
I'd like to see some other revenue streams come in, too.
If I'm understanding it, it sounds like we do have the resources right now to keep this going. Maybe I'm looking at this wrong, but there's $500,000 in the bank. All we're talking about is temporarily keeping this going. Ash talking about is doing some negotiating to keep this going until we can make a more permanent decision. I'm not saying we could keep this going forever.
But there's other resources, Bill, that need to be brought online also to keep the whole effort going.
But have we turned anybody down at this point? I have the impression that
this
we
really... This is the first time we've had a request, I guess.
That we've got resources in the bank that we're not sure whether we should be spending. I think that's one of the questions from the retreat. So here's maybe just temporarily a good utilization, a portion of that, just to keep this going to avoid a halt in an important service.
Do we have a formal request from state libraries for something specific?
We do not. As I indicated, the first meeting that I had with them, and thanks, Jim, for bringing this up, was December 12th. It's my understanding that there have been discussions ongoing. It hadn't escalated to me at that point. We do not have a formal request, and I'm not even sure that we have a procedure for a formal request for them to come forward and ask that. The fact is, we had a handshake deal that was out there to provide this service. State libraries said they cannot go any further with the handshake deal. They need some help to continue as it is being operated. I guess one of the questions I would ask Gene is if the board said, okay, we'll do 2 months at a not to exceed, if then we could have 2 months to negotiate and look at it further. And I don't know if they can answer without talking to their board.
That's correct, Mr. Rippey. And the proposal that we're bringing you is its request for guidance. and I think Mr. Rippey framed it very well about what we are up against here, the quality of service, the funding of the service, and the dealing with the overall usage is at issue, and CI has proposed an interim solution that could be a permanent solution. Again, you have to weigh that against your philosophical desires in the overall operations of the portal.
So, Gene, are you? I'm not hearing any question.
What Mr. Rippey said is correct. That's what we're asking.
Well, to clarify for me, if we said, okay, we'll earmark $14,000 for the next 2 months, January 8th, what's it look like?
Right, I cannot answer that question at this time because we have to look at that against all of our other services.
I think my feeling is that in order for us to provide you with the guidance you need, we probably need a little bit more information in terms of a concrete, or as concrete as you can get, what it would take to maintain the current level of service and absorb some anticipated increase. I don't know how far out you would go, 2 months, 12 months, 2 years. But I think in order for us to have a better frame, we need a better sense of required resources.
And
then we can begin to talk about providing you that assistance. We would have, an ability to have a deeper debate about where that assistance might come from, how we could assist in trying to find that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, that is something we could come back to you with data on at a later date. If that's what you're asking, we can certainly do that.
Last. I guess I'd like staff for 60 days to, you put up a proposal of some money not to exceed, to get out here, and the part that's troubling to me is we were saying 1 in 4 of portal-related questions are going unanswered, so we got a 25% unanswerable rate, right? We either have to keep to our 75% answerable rate or have staff come to us in the next, 2 weeks, and I'll form this into a motion if you all are with me, with a number not to exceed so that we get 60 days to buy into a longer-term process. I think that we've bought 2 years of freebie here that was part of the total operating costs of this portal. And somewhere sooner or later, this money is going to come out of our hide. So we better, sustain our level right now. I don't need a bunch of calls going into the governor's office or into SIPA or CI. So let's find a way to sustain this over the next 60 days and task staff with coming back with very real recommendations at our March meeting.
And I would tell you that is, as you task, a fair amount of that I'm going to roll off to Mr. Westfall, because then we would be talking contractual and it would be attorneys talking to attorneys.
Mr. Morrison.
Just back to something the team said. We're not in a crisis position. What the interim solution is giving the LifeHelp users LifeHelp hosted by Colorado. We're going to ask Colorado. So, vision of decreasing the amount. What we're doing is asking the users to choose. The point is that as your contractor, I'm looking for guidance as to what my next steps are.
Hire another person.
I'm a little confused because I'm still not clear on whether the board's position is that portals should use. I should use portal resources to support a general help desk function for all questions that the public might have via the online channel, or whether the portal contractor should support questions related to the online services. So I think there's four issues here that I would ask you to consider in helping us chart the next.
Yeah, Scott.
We're not in a crisis mode. We're simply bifurcating that traffic.
General questions, Colorado, not the portal questions, but the general questions. Do you have any breakdown, like coding, as to what departments or what types of questions are have any feel for that? Do you have any?
ESCO Automate may have that, but just one other. Their service, our two operators are simply two more operators in the pool of 75. So none of us are discriminating. Our staff answers the same types of questions.
Where I'm going, though, is it like 80% tax questions or labor questions? Or that'd be kind of interesting.
Aaron's made a point to hear this. That is to say, the one that give the users a choice to go to Colorado.gov or to go to Ask Colorado. Days we'll be able to come back to you with hard numbers as to us they can have staff. I'm going to suggest to you that what we propose as a next step, because the State Library Board has directed them to stop supporting us, gives you a solution as I don't think, I'm not understanding why you would request.
I don't want to belabor this, but the reason is, my understanding is, you get two full-time people 9 to 5. As of like yesterday, we don't have anybody from 5 to 8. So our reason for moving on this is so that we're supporting constituent questions that are coming in after 5 o'clock until 8 in the morning.
But we don't have any idea how many of them.
I don't really care if there's one I need to satisfy that need.
We know it's 41% of the total.
No, that's 41% of their total traffic.
That's yeah.
Traffic.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly why I said it.
The 41% is the after hours.
Yeah.
Usage.
Of all calls.
Right. Right.
I guess I want to move back, if I may, to saying, you know what? If there is no impending, you know, drop dead here, I still want 2 weeks staff to come back and tell us it better frame this. And if we are compelled to provide service all night long in the next 2 weeks, we're going to do it.
Glassman, would you like to make a motion?
Yeah, my motion would be that we direct staff to better frame this question. And that through a formal polling of the board, make available not to exceed $15,000 over the course of the next 60 days to sustain a level of service 24 hours a day for portal related questions.
Mr. Chairman, can I have just a clarification since we're making?
Yes.
I think there really should be a distinction between staff, which is Greg and Kathy, and
staff is always SIPA, okay. In my mind.
Okay, but I think in sometimes.
I got you. Okay.
I really do
this
think that
the task.
Particularly in something like this, we need to be very, very clear on any corporate action that this board takes that staff equals Greg and Kathy and the contractor equals Colorado Interactive. I just think, since we're getting down to nitty gritty,
I think that's fine.
Precise.
So my motion stands and staff means SIPA.
I have a second.
You said portal related questions. You meant all constituent traffic.
No, I actually just meant portal related. Because what I heard was Dan say that we're already going to implement something that bifurcates that traffic. If the traffic is bifurcated, part of that's going off to Ask Colorado. I need to be concerned about portal traffic.
Second to that motion.
I would second it, but I'm now thoroughly confused.
Thank you.
Say what you just said again about the bifurcation.
What Dan just described for me is that there's a software package going up that if somebody is on the portal and they have a state-related question, it will send them off to Ask Colorado. If it's portal-related, it's coming to us. I realize there will be confusion among the users.
But I understood the libraries to say that as of the 8th, they're not going to take calls. That
according to what Mr. Morrison put up as text, there would be a choice for people to come to Ask Colorado still. And I believe that solution just went up yesterday. Yes. So today's the first that I had heard about that. So yes, there would still be traffic to us. I'm not sure how this mitigates that problem if librarians are still dealing with things like, what's the status of my nursing license? Or can you tell me if somebody is staying in the state park? Those are the kind of questions that give us problems.
Let me ask it differently. What did your board decide?
Our board decided that continued 24/7 service and support of the CoGov site was not possible beyond the January 2nd, now January 8th date that we talked about.
Therefore,
come to the board and, well, Mr. Rippey requested that we come to the board and ask for guidance, and that's what we're here for now.
What the board decided. So as of the 8th, assuming we did nothing, you would stop taking calls altogether.
That was the discussion on December 12th, yes.
Was that the decision of your board, though?
That was discussion of the board that was made on December 12th, yes.
Which is why I'm confused. Even though Dan may have some kind of bifurcated system, we're going to send calls to them, and as of the 8th, they're not going to take them. Or we're going to send questions. That's what I'm understanding.
Again, this is the first that I'd heard about the bifurcated text on the website.
Aaron, do you want to get
this? They're not working together.
Ask Colorado has their own website at this point. Previous to today, if you click on the Live Help link in the top navigation of any Colorado.gov page, it would automatically route you into a point farther along than that home page. So what they had decided, I think is correct, is that after the 8th, if you click on Live Help, it will no longer route you directly to a Live Help. Based on what we've put into place, that when you click on Live Help, you hit a page, a splash page, and there's a paragraph that says if you have a question related to a portal-related service or an application or a service-related, click here. That will go to, during the business hours, a live chat session hosted by us or another party. Off hours, it will go to an email. It'll pop an email up and say, if you have a question, you can email. Now, otherwise, there's another paragraph that says, if you have other questions related to Colorado, and part of the decision-making process needs to be, if it has to do with the DORA license, is that this is an application portal by Colorado.gov or Interactive, is that a question that is in their bailiwick to even answer? But if there's a question related to Colorado in general, please go to Ask Colorado, which will take them to the front page of their application, which will be in effect. There will be no interruption of service as it relates to that. So simply put, what will go away is click Live Help, and it goes directly to an operator. And in its place will be click Live Help, here's a page, go to an email queue after hours, go to a chat client during hours, to Colorado.gov if it's related to an application or service that was built and maintained by Colorado.gov, or to Ask Colorado, which is still going to be in effect 24/7. It'll actually give us an opportunity to have some statistics on what our...
When you say it will be 24/7, you agree with what he just said? Or did I thought your board directed you that as of a certain date, you would not be 24/7?
That was the understanding as of December 12th, that we would not be 24/7 help. Yes.
But you will be on Ask Colorado.
Ask Colorado will continue as it's has been since inception. It just would.
And Mr. Hainer, is that a 24-hour site that they would
use? Ask Colorado is a 24-hour site. Yes, 24/7. And if I could direct that question to my operational manager, she may have additional information.
Before you do, I am going to have to excuse myself. I apologize for that. I'm going to appoint Mr. Lokaitis as our acting chair. Thank you for accepting that position. And keep me posted.
Can we all go with you?
I don't think you want to.
voting machines.
I guess, let me just... If I could, Mr. Chair, are you still going to answer the question?
We answer
or try
it.
To?
We
was still a certain level of confusion about exactly what the library's decided. The only thing I would ask maybe you to consider is to change your motion. What I would like is something that would say, could we try to keep as close to the status quo as possible pending the 60 days with a certain amount of spending authority while staff figures out what the heck's going on. You know, that would, because the whole issue of is it portal or not portal, or what are they answering or what aren't they answering, I'm confused. I still don't quite get it. But I would like us to see if we could just keep this as much as status quo as possible with Greg working with these folks and trying to figure out what the best solution is with some maybe money that allows, I don't know, give Dan more money to hire another person. I don't know what the answer is. Just to allow him some tools.
Mr. Rickey. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Glassman, you can do that along the lines of what Ms. Mares just suggested. I do have the spending authority to go forward and make this deal, whatever it may be, with your direction on that. You can charge me with, just as Don said, go out there, find a solution, negotiate. Trust me to do the best that I can, come back, hold my feet to the fire, whip me, beat me, whatever, with what I feel is the feeling that I've got from the board, and come back in the next 30 days and say this is where we're at, and start dealing with Gene tomorrow and seeing what we can do.
But if I heard the motion, it was more try to work something that's a short term, correct me if I'm wrong, but just try to work out something that will keep status quo or for the next 60 days, but work the issue up in a greater way that we understand the bigger picture, so we're able to make a more long-term decision in 60 days. So we're not
true. I wouldn't go out and sign a 2-year contract.
Okay.
I would say how do I mitigate, and Richard can fully understand this in lawyer terms. How do we mitigate in the immediate right now, and then what is a possible long-term solution, and bring it back to you. Awesome.
Well, I think I can withdraw my motion because the executive director has the authority. Don, everything that you said, we're on the same page here. And so I think that how we move forward. I would ask that because the business committee will be meeting in the next 30 days, that we'll make this an agenda on that business committee, which many of us sit on. I also want to say to Colorado Libraries, although we're in a little bit of pain right now, and this conversation has been very painful, this is the kind of partnership that government should do more of, and thank you. And even though my initial one, I have to watch out for the portal interests, moving forward, I'm going to be looking out for your interests as well and keeping that partnership. And you all have a heck of a challenge, and with technology, we hope your challenge grows and your calls keep coming in, unfortunately. But it means, as Evan pointed out earlier, a lot more people are engaged, a lot more people are using government services, your services, and so thank you for weathering 2 years with us and biding us some good time.
Thank you.
And I do support the idea of trying to have a temporary extension while we work on a long-term solution, but I would like just maybe a little clarification from Gene. Reading between the lines, I'm assuming that mechanically it may be possible, given depending on what the sense of this board is, for you to work with your board and poll your board and get permission to extend the service as it has been while we work out details. Is that a fair statement, or do you feel like you cannot, but it's not till their next meeting that you can get something formal from them?
We have the ability to get formal input from them. Between meetings. And yes, we will do that today, if not sooner.
And would it, follow-up question, would it be helpful to have a formal motion from this board to help move that along? I mean, I think Greg, Kent raised the question of whether Greg needs specific direction or not. Maybe he doesn't, but I'm wondering if that would be helpful.
What I heard Mr. Rippey say was that we'll start working on this and talking about that. From my perspective, that's enough to take back to the board. But we cannot let this drag out too much longer from their perspectives, because they are the ones shouldering the burden of the service.
There isn't a motion at this time.
That is correct.
I would like to just add one more thing. I don't drag this out anymore. In fact, I'm going to take it to the next agenda item as my prerogative as chair. But I want to say I think we have a bigger issue terms of the knowledge base and tools that we're providing Ask Colorado. These questions are becoming more complex. They need to be able to reach into something, so that they can direct folks that are wanting to do an inquiry on their nursing license or whatever. We really haven't thought through the statewide customer relationship management, but all states are trying to tackle this now. It's certainly something we're looking at in OIT as we look at an enterprise architecture for the state. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Morrison for a very abbreviated version of the General Manager's Report.
Gene, thank you. Sir, thank you so much. Let me give you my card.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. We didn't have a November meeting, and in the interest of time, I'm going to go touch very briefly on bragging points, and then share with you the financials of the portal and invite your questions. You have the December report. You previously received the November report, even though we did not have a meeting. We've had two very productive months as we've come screaming to the end of the year. It's always a hustle to get commitments fulfilled and applications launched by December 31st, and we were very proud that we were able to meet our obligations in November and December. In November, we launched our online tax payment portal. This is, again, a DOR application. We can now file and pay for about five different tax types online, and we'll be adding tax types as we go through the year this year. That was a big success. We have a new application called Contact Compass, which allows users of the portal to use a keyword approach to finding state services. So if you have a jaguar in your backyard and you want to know how to get rid of it, you can type the keyword jaguar, don't test me on this, and find out how to do that. So that was a year in development, and we're in partnership with all the records and agencies to self-maintain that functionality through an admin function that we built in conjunction with it. We have, in November, launched an e-newsletter sign-up feature for Office of Economic Development and International Trade, and some improvements to our key motorist insurance database and checkout utilities. In December, the crowning glory of December, if not for the whole year, is that we launched our online driver license renewal application and a state ID card renewal application. This was under the sponsorship of Roxas Huber with guidance from Becky Davis. This application came to us in April. We spec'd it and built it, tested it, and launched it in what I would consider to be record time. And we have a grand total of three successful renewals, Becky Davis being one of those, Roxy Huber the other, and Kathy Gappinger. Thank you very much for being a part of our soft rollout. Our goal is to get all of the 1.5 million registered drivers in Colorado to use that service as soon as possible. We get 75 cents each time they do that. We also launched an application for Douglas County as the payment engine app lets folks come into the lobby and, and pay for county services using our payment engine. And we also continue to use our CMS tool to train state employees and launch websites. Directing you very quickly to page 7, the application queue, we continue to maintain this every month. I'll save you the trouble of counting them. We have 22 free applications in development and 13 fee-based applications in development. That includes websites going onto the CMS. That makes 35 active projects, and we have a number of others in discussion that really you'll see coming active as we go through the next couple of months. And on page 9, our drivers, our online car tag renewal service, you see the graphs, continues to be strong. Had a slight drop off in November, but that's, I'm told by Becky, a normal pattern considering that there are fewer vehicles renewing their car tags in the month of November. That said, I'll invite any questions about the GM report, and I'll pass out the financials so that we can talk about those. First.
Does the same bank handle the American Express card too?
Yes, sir. They gave us a great rate. It's even lower than Visa, MasterCard, so we were happy to offer that. The poor financials continue to be strong. There are no unusual patterns in these numbers. What you see on this piece of paper is a three-month snapshot. You should be accustomed to seeing this by now. Revenues are fairly stable. Expenses, which is always a measure to look at, operating expenses are fairly stable as well. You see there in the middle block the SIPA revenue share broken out separately. And in the bottom box is the month of November. We don't have December's number yet since it's only the 3rd of January. But you can see the transaction volume and how that breaks out. Jesus. I'll be glad to answer any questions about that.
Were you saying that 75%, or we're getting 75 cents in every license and ID card renewal moving forward?
Yes.
Which would not be reflected until next month, right? Do you have any projections what those volumes are like on a monthly basis or did revenue?
It's kind of, volumes are going to be dependent on marketing, and this is a soft rollout, so that's why we only have three of our closest friends who've renewed so far. But I don't have any.
Was Senator May one of them?
No.
But I know three times.
I don't have any.
Okay.
I might have an answer for you. My county says that they are increasing at 4% a month.
Drivers?
Online re-registrations.
Oh, yeah. Vehicles.
Becky can probably speak to this better than I can, but because of an anomaly in the way the state law works, we're going to see a big wave of driver license renewals in about 2 years, is it, Becky? In the interim, it'll be a fairly small trickle of traffic because most of the licenses don't renew until this cycle comes up. And so we'll see a huge burst of renewals in a couple of years. In other words, the link is not published on the website. We have to give you the URL because we want to do a soft rollout where we can make sure it works.
Can you add a CDL certification to my...
Kent, are you up?
Oh.
Are you ready for...
2011.
No, I can't.
Oh, we can do that.
Dan, I don't...
Can't change photos.
Rippy's still here? I don't have to warn you guys too much, but... you know, on the 9th, you'll have the session open, and you're going to have 100 legislators in there turning in bills. Probably be seeing about 740 to 750 bills go through. One of those bills, I know for a fact, being drafted right now, would change the vehicle registration from 1 year at a time to 2 years at a time. You might keep that in mind. I don't know how that affects you.
Will it double the fee?
Probably.
Well, then we're happy for that change.
But fee for service, I don't know about that.
No, that's interesting information, because if it extends the period for two years, then
I don't know that the bill will get through, but it's going to be introduced.
It would theoretically cut our potential user base in half.
Yes.
We'll have to do more marketing.
Yeah.
Other questions?
With no additional questions, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, to Mr. Glassman and Mr. Rippey with the Business Committee report.
As long as Greg doesn't re-enter the room, this will be really, really fast. Oh, he's back. Welcome. I'm going to turn it right over to Greg for an update on the Business Portal Feasibility Study.
Well, if I can see, and I don't know if I'll get here. Bottom of the screen.
Oh, okay.
Ah, absolutely. Happy New Year. As promised, this is the delivery of the report from North Highland about the Business One-Stop Feasibility Study. We have with us here today Joe Weisbrod and William Browning from North Highland.
Non-cash expenses.
We had a meeting yesterday of the Business Committee and went through this. And I am not going to go through the entire report, which you've all received. What I'm going to try and do here today is pick out a few salient points that I believe get to the core of the issue, and then at the end we can get to next steps. One of the things, as I was thinking about this following our conversation yesterday, is that a lot of people, even in our Business Committee, had not been involved to the extent that they saw where we came from. And I wanted to show this slide here where we talked about the original scope and meeting with North Highland and our original Colorado Business Express, where we started from. We started by saying, okay, there's a business problem out there. But Colorado has a number of online applications. Secretary of State certainly has just a ton of them and has done a wonderful job of doing it. But there does not exist a single enterprise-wide application where an entrepreneur can access across agencies that they need to interface with, enable to make this a better experience of creating a new business. And I'm sorry that this doesn't show up a little bit better here, but there is an opportunity that as the portal, we have the opportunity to integrate those disparate but yet at the same time similar operations that a new business would face. So as we launched into the feasibility study, we engaged with North Highland along with Colorado Interactive to evaluate if Colorado and Colorado.gov can be successful, as other states have, in launching a one-stop business portal, and if this implementation should proceed. And so that's where we're at today, should this implementation proceed. And that is the reason, you can't see this bottom, but these are the state and federal agencies that we identified as core stakeholders in. It has got DORA, it has got the Office of Economic Development
and International Trade.
International Trade, I've gone IT, it's not IT. Also with the IRS. The interesting thing that we found as we went through on the IRS is what they used to have as an online services for procuring your federal employer identification number is in abeyance right now. They will call us back when they decide that they're going to put it back online. Found that was pretty interesting. So what I'd like to talk about just a little bit out of that report is the executive summary, the opportunities that were identified by North Highland, some of the clear iteration of risks, the recommendation that is coming out of the port from North Highland, and what our next steps should be. So in the executive summary, and everything that you'll see up here is in the report that you have already received. But it clearly states at the beginning of the executive summary, a business portal is highly desirable and in demand by agency participants. As we go down there, it talks about the CR100. This is not a CR100 project. It simply is a very clear near-term opportunity, and it is a one of the largest opportunities for improvement as we look at an enterprise solution. But it is also clearly one of the risks that we have out there, that there are projects in DOR and CDLE that are competing for those resources. But as we talk about risk, those risks that we just talked about, for them to be mitigated, there are critical success factors that must be executed and will determine the success or failure. These are the identified critical success factors: executive sponsorship and leadership, project governance, project management, ownership, and communications and change management. And I threw out a new term that I made up yesterday to the business committee, culture comfort. This is in red, and this is part of the executive summary. North Highland believes the business portal is feasible. Didn't mean to do that. Right-click. But recommends further analysis in order for the SIPA board to make a decision based on a firmly defined scope and related costs. And Bill, I think this is the piece that you were talking about yesterday. And this is right out of North Highland's report, and I think it speaks very clearly to some of the issues that we were grappling with yesterday. Yes, this is a feasibility study. We're not done on it. There is more that needs to be done as far as analysis and scope before we can say, let's move forward. The opportunities that were identified, they broke them down into a couple different places. There were some very near-term opportunities that are in all likelihood to go forward regardless of this project going forward. But there are also some long-term business portal opportunities that would be difficult to achieve if the business portal is not approved to move forward. And there's a number of them, and you can see these in the report. But clearly, a large number of long-term business portal opportunities that would be difficult to achieve without going forward. The risks, and I just brought up two that are in here. You've got on page 32, I believe, of the report, the entire chart of the risk. But if you look at potential staffing impact, those are the risks that we're going to see as we move forward that have to be mitigated within the agencies and with how we scope and gather requirements on this. But if you look at the mitigations, time and time again, you'll see the suggested mitigation, again, is governance, project management, program management, interagency, because this is an interagency project, and dedicated resources. Those are the risks that we're going to be facing ongoing with that. So we look at, what is the recommendation of the North Highland report? Again, they state it's highly desirable and in demand. Based on the scope identified through the facilitated sessions that North Highland had, and the risk identified, the Small Business Development Center and the CI surveys, we believe the project itself is feasible and recommend that detailed requirements gathering, and we've changed from phase one to phase zero to next steps. That phraseology has continued to change.
Yes.
Phase one proceeds. Upon completion of the requirements, a detailed business case and implementation resource plan can be solidified, enabling the SIPA board to make an informed decision. I have in here a link that would link me, if I was on my computer, back to the appropriate 6.2, I believe, is detailed as the feasibility assessment recommendation. There's a lot more that goes down into it. There's more substance to it. But I think this right here encapsulates the essence of the feasibility assessment. Part of this, and this is a new slide for those of you that were at the business committee yesterday, we call it feasibility assessment, which is what we have completed as of today. Phase one, talking about new businesses, moving on into established businesses. And as Jill is the author of this, what she termed these as is, give me the right term, Jill. No, the, thank you, Bill. aggressive elaboration.
Bill, very aggressive.
And, And so this is just kind of how it would look like. And you can see as we have this repeated each subsequent phase, you've got no-goes. So as you make the decision to move forward on this, this doesn't mean that you're buying the whole enchilada that you're talking about. It is still appropriate, and this is still the model, as Bob Feingold talked about. This is the model that you go forward for launching a project. We are in the feasibility assessment stage of it. The next steps are talking about let's go forward with detailed requirements. The detailed requirements would be a co-function of CI and myself going forward. Governance is at the very top of it. We had the discussion, and Mr. Mares said there's no need to create a whole new bureaucracy. We can, within our governance model that we have in the business committee, we can have the appropriate oversight of this as it goes forward. This is a new slide for those of you that were at the business committee yesterday. Clearly spells out the next step deliverables of what would be expected. And also the very, and this is to your point, Kent, I also believe that I insist that we give you benchmarks and milestones on when these deliverables will be given back to you, because I think that's important. That's the essence of the report. I will answer questions in a moment, but I also had to bring up just a little bit of a conclusion from Bill Cosby. I don't know what the key to success is, but I do know the key to failure is trying to please everybody. And, you know, what's a good presentation without a quote from Bill Cosby? That is what the report tells you. In my viewpoint, in pulling out what I believe are salient parts of it and the recommendation of the North Highland report, as we move forward, if you give us the direction to move forward, and I think Mr. Glassman from the business committee standpoint has some comments.
I do have some comments. Also a question. Do we need a motion to accept the North Highland report, or is that just a operational?
It would be nice. I can tell you that I have received a project closeout letter from North Highland, of which I will sign, that says we have received your report. It's met the requirements of the scope that we charged you with, and that we are going to accept it. I haven't signed it, so yes, if you would
motion
that says I can sign it, accepting the project closeout letter from North Highland. You know, in our discussions yesterday, if you take some time with this report and look down to the work that was done on it, especially the identification of what the applications and processes that are out there, you know, when we started, we didn't know how the CR100 existed out there and what an important document it was to new businesses starting. This is kind of one that fell in our lap. And as Jill did the facilitated session on that part of it, it was pretty eye-opening for all the participants that were in it about the need for collaboration and cross-agency collaboration. And so there was a lot of...
Yes.
I've also got a whole lot of other portal opportunities that are out there that are separate from what was presented in this report that we think in all likelihood are going to be great opportunities in the short term for the portal to engage in with the various agencies. But I'd love to have a motion to...
Separate from business?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Have a list of those?
I do.
We're putting the state-to-state speech together, so...
I will forward that one to you.
Okay.
Senator?
I move we accept the report, or you accept it, give you permission to do it, or whatever.
Quorum is six.
I second.
The reason I say quorum is six is because we only have 12 that have been appointed, and so majority of those that have been appointed, not those that are allowed to serve on the board.
I would like to point out, though, that all the work is not CIPIC work or CI work. Major issues that are going to affect Department of Labor, Revenue, DORA,
and Senator
Secretary of State office, big time.
Well, Secretary of State probably has less than anybody else because they have a very, and one of the things that Bill brought up was what he would like to see out of this deliverable on requirements is a discussion about architecture that's out there. Are there disparate architectures, and that's where we work with OIT and get Mike and Ron Houston talking about it. Enterprise architecture to talk about it.
Does it look like some of what SOS is already doing could be integrated in?
Oh, absolutely. SOS is, we would leverage upon. We're not going to say, boy, you need to do this on your back-end systems because they got a pretty clean system that's working out there. But it's very important functionality that a person starting a new business needs to have. They can get a long ways towards starting a new business just utilizing Secretary of State's office, but they can't complete it. And the functionality, as Bob Feingold talked about this as we first began talking about it, is the continuum of what does a business portal look like. It can be as simple as, here's a list of people you should probably call and talk to if you're going to start a new business, to on the other end of it, here's what you need based on your zip code for licensing within your local jurisdiction. Somewhere in between there is the evolution of the business portal that I think we're going to head off on. And we're going to start with much more than simply here's who you need to talk to. We're going to start with going, do you, and really the implementation where we're talking about going there is talking about the interactive tool that allows someone to come in and say, and that will be a deliverable of this phase one requirements, is going out there and talking about the interactive tool that you log in there and it asks, do you have a state tax ID? No. Boom, it's going to take you over to the Department of Revenue. Do you have a status of corporate standing? No, it's going to take you to Bill's site over there and lead you through what you've got to do to have your legal entity up and running. And so that's where we're envisioning that this phase one goes to for new businesses. But as the report has accurately pointed out, the risks are there are some huge projects going out there right now that as we go forward and identify agency points that we need to talk to for requirement gathering, even just for requirement gathering, whether we're talking to the Department of Revenue, they've got a lot on their plate right now in the IT arena. I think you do, don't you, Pat?
The whole department's under modification.
Yeah, man.
And so the first step is, as we go to this is talking to those core agencies that we've identified and said, okay, our board has given us the go-ahead to do the requirements, to talk about the scope, to really put this scope and then come back from the CI side and the SIPA side and say, here's the costs and benefits. That's the next step. What we found in this feasibility assessment is there are no huge obstacles out there that would say, this can't work, pack your bags, go home. And one of the interesting things Dan and I and Kent have been talking about in the evolution of this portal is, really, for the first 24 months that we've been in operation, we were looking for low-hanging fruit, things that we could be successful on, minimal amount of effort compared to something like this business portal, which is an enterprise solution, enterprise application that is going to touch a number, and it's dynamic and it'll grow to the number of agencies that it talks. This is a difficult project. Don't kid yourself that it's not. And when we come back and we talk about scope and cost and requirements, it's going to take a lot of portal resources. We're going to try and minimize the amount of resources that it requires from agencies, simply because there's not a lot of that out there. But we need a couple key executive sponsorships, one from OIT and from the governor's office, for us to all go on board and say, this is a good direction for us to move.
Well, also, we have to consider the fee-for-service part of it, because some of these entities, the fees that are charged for those are in the statutes. So you might end up having to do some bills or to change the way the statutes read in regards to that fee.
Well,
and then when
here's
you're corrected, it has to be distributed in accordance with whatever the statutes come up with, too.
Right, and there are a number of fees that are in there that you have to pay as you get started. Those are statutory. Those are if we do the interactive and it sends you over there, that agency's in 90%, and I'm pulling this off my head or other body parts, that says you would actually go to their website, use their payment engine, whatever they're using, they would still get it, and there is nothing that we even touch. It doesn't run through us. It doesn't. We don't direct it towards coffers unless we're doing the payment engine. So those are going to continue to just flow the same way they flow today on those fees on how they. Mr. Glassman.
I'm just glad you love your job so much, Greg. I thought there was a motion on the table to let you accept the North Highland report. But if you got more you want to say, I won't pass my next motion. Don't leave the room.
I second the motion.
I think you...
Does
we vote on that?
Yeah.
No, I don't think there's any more discussion. We just want to accept that report, right?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then I have a motion. And this will let Greg talk some more about something he's very passionate about. This derived out of the business committee yesterday. For the board to direct staff to direct CI to continue working with the affected departments and agencies for additional requirements gathering. The board's desire is to obtain a deeper level of detail in regard to the cost, architecture, and other business aspects of the business portal.
Second?
Question? And Greg touched upon this. I am a little unclear on the resources required to go to these next steps. Greg, how do you picture that being done? You said you wanted to minimize the agency resources. This is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, and I think it'll vary on agencies. But it will be our job to try and minimize what we're asked. But there's certain things within an agency that we can't go get. And we will go back to each agency and say, just as we asked you for a point of contact as we did this feasibility, would you please give us a point of contact to go through the requirement gathering stage? We're going to have that discussion with each agency, and they're going to have to kind of have the discussion and dialogue with us, saying, you know, revenue's already had it internally. This might be coming down the pike. How are we going to handle it? We'll talk to labor and Don and Joe and say, okay, here's what we need from you. What's your bandwidth look like? I can't presuppose that at this point.
But when you say we, I mean, a lot of what you're talking about up until now, I think Jill has been doing. Are you talking about Dan or you or?
It will originally be Dan and I. We will have the discussion between the two of us. Kent and I have had that discussion. I will come back to the business committee if we're talking about using an outsource help for us. Dan and I need to have that discussion first on where are our gaps and where can we get help, not only on the functionality, the timing of it, but also from a political standpoint. And I can't tell you that right now. It's on our agenda to try and figure it out. We will communicate with whatever this governance model that Kent and the business committee determine this is the working group, this is the oversight group of how we go forward. Ken has indicated that even if it's just the business committee, and sorry for bringing this up, Ken, but it will be modeled over the EGC model, but maybe a mini EGC model, but still staying with the same concepts that Mike has instituted under the EGC and make it work that way, but with ourselves.
I mean, so what I think I'm hearing is that we're going to go forward on the next steps, but how we do that is maybe subject to some fleshing out. Could involve outside resources, could be Colorado Interactive, it could be. That's something to be fleshed out, is what I think I'm hearing.
And if the business committee is the default steering committee, which I think we've determined, I mean.
Or even a subset of the business committee, and you know.
We need to set up a regular set of meetings and protocol for the governance and keep vetting this out, I think. It's just my thoughts. feel comfortable with that, Bill? Or
I think so. The only discomfort I'm feeling is not knowing exactly how we achieve those next steps and what the resources are where they're going to come from. But that's, I'm okay with the concept, I think, of that.
Bill, it's my desire that at the first convened business committee that I have a deliverable to you to put some substance around that so that when we have that meeting, we can have that discussion. And it will only be a starting point from my viewpoint, and then you can give me some clearer direction.
So you'll have estimates. Senator May.
Bill, you got a wag about how many new businesses a year you process?
Afraid to guess.
Jill says it's in the document.
It's in that inventory.
There's a lot of information, and I dug into it more last night than I had in a long time.
I would be tempted to make
a
guess, but I should not be wrong.
And I can tell you, and some of the interesting things, if you look at the survey that was done of other NIC states that have business portals, when you see things like, and I'm really pulling this one out, but I believe in Hawaii now, 75% of new businesses utilize that portal for creation of a new business.
75% of all new companies in Hawaii are formed through the portal.
Yeah.
I think Bill's got a better statistic than that, frankly, from the Secretary of State's perspective.
And this, folks, this isn't the end all. This is a pretty good starting point, I think.
I think Jill thinks about 80,000. I don't know. I think I'm hearing 72,000. That sounds right to me.
Today is what?
Wow.
Per year.
Well, may I ask any further questions for Mr. Rippey? With that, I'd like to move to ask if there's any other business or discussions.
Did you vote on your motion?
Oh, we didn't vote on our motion. Well, let's vote on our motion.
We're all in favor. Say.
All in favor.
As a close to that, I just want to acknowledge both North Island, I'll say it correctly, and CI, because as a team, they came together beautifully, really moving this, but all of this work gets done in the trenches of labor and revenue and the Secretary of State and reg agencies, and the cooperation here has been fabulous. And I'll tell you what, if there would be anything that stopped this, it would have been those folks not playing nice together. And the fact is, everybody's playing so well together that we're moving forward. We're more the glue than the impetus here, and that's what we should be. Thank you all.
Senator
and Rippey did okay too.
We already voted, right?
Yes.
Let's adjourn.
I just want to remind everybody that the two biggest problems you've got right now in system development are in the Department of Revenue, which everything's under development, and the Department of Labor, which we canned the Genesis project, so UI's still kind of hanging out there on what we're going to do.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator. But you know what? As Becky pointed out to us yesterday, five best projects that they've had come out of there in the last year have been portal projects. Those have been working well. We need to pat ourselves on the back a little bit because we are doing some good things out there. We are getting projects moved through. We do have some blips, but in revenue, Becky's just kicking out applications.
If I could add this on a broader level, OIT with the new EGC governance model has joined forces with revenue. We, for instance, certified the CETA procurement, and we have a very adequate governance model now in place. That just happens to be a very proven commercial off-the-shelf product that's been implemented very successfully in probably close to a dozen other states or jurisdictions, provinces within Canada. They're Colorado-based, and they have every interest in seeing us be very successful in areas of application, deployment, data migration, business process engineering. We really got a package going on with them. So, Senator May,
I think that at this point, I mean, we could provide more of a briefing on that, but our new governance model is really going to assure that all projects going forward are successful for the state of Colorado. So we'll have some cleanup on C-STARS and other stuff, but that's what William does.
I have one more request, if I may.
Yes.
It may not be short. I'll try and make it, and Kent and I were having this discussion, and Evan, it speaks directly to a lot of you. Are you leaving? Huh?
Yeah.
Could you give me 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Thank you. One of the things that we're continuing to see as we're helping with content management system, that where we go out there, is really a shortage of resources. Mike, you and I have talked about it. Kent and I have talked about it, and I know that there's been some feedback coming back on, we need some help. I would like the board to approve me going out and looking at someone that I could hire as content management expertise to help agencies and to talk with Mike about, as we've talked about at CI, is SIPA hire someone, lend them to OIT, house them at CI so that they're close to the people that are doing FatWire. I would like to just have the approval to go forward to explore this, to see what, how much that person may cost, how it may really look, because we really need to give some help to these agencies on some content and be able to task them to get the governor's office exactly what they need, when they need it, and how they need it.
You said Lynn. I'm going to speak selfishly from the governor's office. We need more than just a loan. We need a permanent fix. So I would support your motion, but I'm not sure it's going to satisfy me.
Let me clarify the term lend. Would be on SIPA's payroll. The lend means it goes to OIT so that they can oversee in the governor's office, or in OIT as part of the governor's office, to be able to do that. And by the lend, I mean I'm not supervising or charging them, nor is CI. They're being tasked as OIT in the governor's office.
With very specific requirements on the governor and the governor's site and Colorado.gov proper, this person is going to become very familiar to you, Evan, because this will be your go-to person to perform content management.
I would expect this person stays. Lend is a term that has happened from private sector going to OIT in the past, and they're out there working for them. Lend means I pay.
But I want to cut through this and say this is really about your specific requirements in the governor's office.
Well, I'm happy to make the motion, not to belabor the point, but what happens when another agency finds themselves in the same spot that I'm in?
We deal with it. I can't tell you. We look at our resources, we see what we can do, we see how it works. I don't know.
Part of the process, if I could please, is as we bring our consolidation together, we're going to be looking at the skill sets of very capable webmasters across the state. They exist. And we're going to be able to look at that talent base and really augment our content management and our web development in concert with SIPA with those resources. But right now, we need to address your issue in the governor's office. This is, for the most part, a dedicated resource to help you through the issues in the governor's
office. That we
I second that.
I will come back, and if we find somebody in the interim before the next board meeting that I think meets all of it, I still have the authority to be able to hire, but I would not do it without an electronic notification to the board that this is imminent. Bob?
You're going to generate a job description, a list of qualifications, right?
No, we're just going to see who. Absolutely, Bob.
Okay.
And you know what? I'm not qualified to put that job description. I need to talk to Aaron. And Aaron's going to,
write that job description? Aaron's plugged in to know where those types of people.
Oh, I'm the chair, so I can. OIT and specifically Evan's office will want input into that scope of work for the
absolutely.
FTE.
Absolutely.
When do we meet?
Yes, sir.
When do we meet next? A month?
Month.
Be my preference that, you know, you do whatever background you had talked about at the beginning, what the job duties are, description, need. I mean, here we are at the 11th hour, people are ready to leave, we're having a pretty significant discussion. It would be my preference that you not hire anybody until we have a chance to talk about this at the next meeting. I can't see if there's somebody out there who's, unless you're aware of somebody right
I'm
now.
I'm not, and I'm fine doing that.
It would be my preference. And you just kind of come back and then we maybe talk about it further.
And, you know, we do have a personnel committee. This is going to be a person that technically works for the authority. We can charge the personnel committee with coming back with the report to the board.
I don't know.
I'm fine with you just looking at it and coming up with something and let's talk about it and put it on the agenda the next meeting.
Thank you guys for.
The only reason that I even threw it out there was if we find the right person and we can give the governor's office some help sooner rather than later, I wouldn't want to just delay because we didn't have a board meeting.
This ties into some of the discussions we've had at cabinet level and accelerated requirements in Governor Ritter's office for content management. So there's some urgency coming directly from the governor on this. I just thought I'd mention that.
There's a motion on the table to, I believe, have you move forward with this hiring.
Yeah, I guess the only question after Don's comments were, do you want to wait till the next board meeting to pull the trigger?
Well, I withdraw my comments. Go ahead. It sounds like you've been talking about it, then go for it. You have the power.
And I wouldn't do it without the governor's office and clearly YTs.
We've discussed the content management at the retreat, and so there has been subsequent at least two meetings where we discussed the need for augmenting certain offices that don't have the extended skill set to go to the training and everything to do the fat wire content management. It just so happens the governor's office is critical need in that area. So
that's all from me.
Other business?
We just need to vote on the motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Other business? Motion to adjourn.
To adjourn. Second. Aye.
Back on as a non-voting member.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Great holiday.
Oh, this time
I was just being quiet.
Yeah, it is.
Thanks, Don.
I expect really in the next 2 weeks.
How are you adjusting?
Don, you.
How are you adjusting?
Don, you and I have to have lunch for these days.
Get together. So then, CI will talk about the requirements that are going to drive this next level of detail. And at that, we start talking about architecture, all those lovely things. So